Is there something wrong?
Warning. Life support failure on all decks. Abandon ship.
Maybe it is time to take command.
Bridge to Captain.
Join Jan Shaw and her guests as they discuss cosmic creating and the path to reclaiming our power as cosmic creators.
Library computer, data being received.
To go where too few have gone before. A production of Cosmic Reality Radio.
Hello and welcome to this week's Cosmic Creating Show. My name is Jan Shaw. I'm known as the Success Alchemist. You can find me at thesuccessalchemist.net, at thewebalchemist.net, and on YouTube and Facebook, Jan Shaw, the Success Alchemist, and on Twitter at Coach Jan Shaw. Today's date is 19th of September 2020, and the title of today's show is Trump's Secret Weapons, COVID Lawsuits, RBG Dead, Subpoenas, Rig for Red. There is so much to share with you this week. I do hope, again, I've got time to cover it all. I've selected certain topics, as I said in the title of the show. There's so much more going on, I just don't have time to cover it all. So I'm going to start with Trump's secret weapon. And just a quick disclaimer about this. This is by Mike Adams, the health ranger. And I have to say that I don't fully agree with everything he posts. And in fact, a couple of years ago, I actually commented on one of his articles that he was really dramatizing and, you know, putting out fear porn. I can't even remember what the subject was, but, you know, I didn't like the tone. And actually, interestingly, his tone seemed to change after my comment, which I was quite pleased about. Anyway, this is the first of two articles on this subject. Trump's secret weapon revealed. 14th Amendment allows the president to strip electoral college votes from states, supporting censorship against voters, enables mass arrests of mayors, governors and judges who support BLM. And this was written on the 6th of September, or it was published on the 6th of September, so a week or so ago. The results of the 2020 election are already locked in. Trump wins and he goes on to dismantle the corrupt criminal Democrat Party that tried and failed to destroy America and replace it with a communist regime of left-wing authoritarian tyrants. How does Trump accomplish this? President Trump has a secret weapon that I've been talking about for several months in Health Ranger Report podcasts on Brighteon.com. Until recently, I didn't know the exact nature of the secret weapon, but was told by highly reliable sources that plans were already in place for Trump to defeat the Democrats and protect America from left-wing efforts to destroy this nation. Of course, we know from CUE that there is a plan and we must trust the plan. Now we've been able to confirm the content of this secret weapon that will be invoked to save America. It's the 14th Amendment to the Constitution of the United States of America. How the 14th Amendment grants Trump the power to strip power away from treasonous domestic enemies. The 14th Amendment, and there's a link to the text of the amendment, speaks directly to the powers of the federal government in dealing with officials, individuals, and states that are engaged in rebellion against the United States of America. Specifically, the 14th Amendment grants the US president the power to arrest and indefinitely hold all public officials, including mayors, governors, state legislators, federal judges and law enforcement officials who support, in quotes, rebellion against the United States or who have given aid or comfort to the enemies of America, Section 3. Eliminate House of Representatives positions for California and other states which are engaged in supporting big tech censorship platforms that are supporting rebellion against the United States of America and, in quotes, abridging the right of voting age citizens to participate in elections via censorship. This implies that electoral college votes would also be proportionally reduced in these states, Section 2. It would also apply to states like Oregon, which are reportedly funding war encampment installations that house insurrectionists who are unleashed each night to attack federal buildings and federal law enforcement officers. Eliminate all federal financial support for cities and states which are engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the United States. Section 3 specifically states that all such claims of federal money obligations to the states shall be held illegal and void. Section 4. Incidentally, in an interview with Judge Jeanine, Trump actually used the word insurrection, and as I've said in many shows, he puts in coded messages. So that leads me to believe that perhaps this is true, that he will be invoking the 14th Amendment against insurrection. Continuing. In essence, the 14th Amendment grants American citizens equal protection under law, but for public officials or states which are engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the United States, those equal protections are revoked. The Democrats already know all this, which is why they are pursuing a plan of election chaos, hoping to throw the entire election process into mass confusion, from which they plan to attempt an illegal coup to eliminate Trump from office and claim political power over the nation. Many Democrat-run states are already in open rebellion, aiding and comforting illegal insurrectionists who are attempting to overthrow the United States government. It should be rather obvious that at this very moment, California, Oregon, Washington, New York, Illinois, and many other states are engaged in open rebellion against the United States, and that thousands of public officials within those states, mayors, governors, state legislators, public chiefs, etc., are granting aid or comfort to the rebellion. Under the 14th Amendment, Trump merely needs to declare an insurrection. Then he can have Mayor Lightfoot, Chicago, Mayor Wheeler, Portland, Mayor Durkin, Seattle, and even de Blasio, New York City, arrested and removed from office for violating their oaths of office. All those mayors and many more have taken an oath to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States, but they have violated their oaths, and under the 14th Amendment, that means they have nullified their own right to equal protection under the law. Because they violated the US Constitution and actively engaged in rebellion against the United States, in other words, they no longer enjoy the benefits of protections under the Constitution. In addition, President Trump can eliminate congressional House seats for states that support rebellion, reducing their apportionment in the House. This means the state's electoral college votes are also reduced, since those numbers are based on the number of House plus Senate representatives for each state. This is based on the fact that these states are aiding the efforts of big tech to deny the rights of conservatives to participate in elections and voting via politically targeted censorship and voter suppression tactics now routinely used by Google, Facebook, and other tech giants. He doesn't mention Twitter, but that's another big one. Section 2 of the 14th Amendment specifically addresses voter suppression. It says that states which support the suppression of the ability of citizens to participate in voting will lose a portion of their own seats in Congress, as well as electoral college representation. Right now, the most overt and obvious voter suppression is being carried out by big tech platforms such as Facebook, Google, Twitter, and YouTube. But similar censorship is also being undertaken by Microsoft, Apple, Vimeo, and other tech giants. These companies are granted aid and comfort by numerous left-wing cities and states, which often grant these companies property tax deferments and legal protections against legitimate investigations or prosecutions. In other words, states like California are actively protecting the big tech tech platforms that are suppressing voter participation via politically targeted censorship. And this puts California in violation of Section 2 of the 14th Amendment. Furthermore, President Trump can arrest and imprison all state and federal judges who have granted aid or comfort to insurrectionists by, for example, releasing them without charge after they were arrested for participating in riots or assaulting law enforcement officers. This means all Soros-funded district attorneys and anti-America judges who have supported the insurrection can now be arrested and removed from office in one fell swoop. Remember that Democrat officials in Oregon, Washington, California, New York, Illinois, and other states have overtly granted protections and in some cases actual funding to Black Lives Matter terrorists and Antifa, of course. This means those officials are complicit in rebellion against the United States. Section 3 of the 14th Amendment states that they cannot hold any public office, civil or military. Here's the language. No person shall be a senator or representative in Congress, or elector of president and vice president, or hold any office, civil or military, under the United States or under any state who, having previously taken an oath as a member of Congress or as an officer of the United States or as a member of any state legislature or as an executive or judicial officer of any state to support the Constitution of the United States shall have engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same or given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof. Finally, Section 4 of the 14th Amendment says, neither the United States nor any state shall assume or pay any debt or obligation incurred in aid of insurrection or rebellion against the United States. This means that citizen states which are suffering extreme economic losses due to their support for rioting and insurrection, such as Portland, Seattle, Los Angeles, Chicago, New York, etc., cannot make any claim to federal money to reimburse them for their losses. Their losses have been incurred as a result of their support for acts of insurrection and rebellion against the United States, and thus the United States has no obligation to reimburse them for such losses. All this explains why Nancy Pelosi recently declared President Trump and the GOP to be enemies of the state. This is the kind of language that would only be used by the Speaker of the House if they intend to attempt a violent coup followed by mass exterminations of their political opponents. And of course, Pelosi is pushing for all these funds to go to these Democratic states that are involved in encouraging the rioting and defunding the police. Carrying on, to initiate all this, Trump merely needs to officially declare an insurrection is underway. The reason Democrats went insane when Trump won the 2016 election is because holding the office of the presidency grants that person access to all the powers that the US Constitution and subsequent law confers to the president. One of those powers is the power to declare an insurrection against the government. Such a declaration unleashes enormous powers of government, which are then directed by the president against the domestic enemies which are waging war against the United States. It is now rather obvious that we are already in that war, which is being waged by radical extreme left-wing terrorists on a nightly basis. That war is supported and aided by the tech giants, who censor all critics of the insurrectionists, while aiding their acts of treason by allowing their platforms to be used to coordinate attacks against America. Left-wing mayors, governors, judges, state representatives, and other oath-swearing officials are also openly engaged in insurrection against the United States, and Trump's declaration of an open insurrection will enable them all to be arrested and removed from power. This is what Trump must do to save America. It is unlikely that he will declare an insurrection before the election, however. This action seems likely to occur after the election. Why Trump should declare an insurrection the day before the election? Strategically speaking, we urge President Trump to declare the insurrection before the election, because this would allow him to challenge the Electoral College votes from states which are supporting open rebellion against the United States, for all the reasons noted above. Even if Trump declares the insurrection just one day before the election, this grants him a basis from which he may challenge the Electoral College votes from insurrectionist states like California. It also grants Trump the opportunity to arrest all the corrupt left-wing officials the day after the election, shutting down their criminal attempts to counterfeit ballots after the fact, that tried to win by cheating in the weeks following the election itself. Trump can largely shut down that effort by simply declaring an insurrection and arresting all these treasonous actors the day after the election. They cannot counterfeit more ballots, after all, if they're sitting in jail. This action would, of course, cause the radical left to ignite an attempted nationwide kinetic war against the government. But at that point, Trump is free to issue escalated engagement orders for federal law enforcement, while even bringing in the US military to halt all domestic enemies of the United States who are engaged in acts of treason or warfare against America. Deploying the military to defeat domestic enemies of America does not violate posse comitatus. Remember when I told you a year ago that when martial law comes to America, you will beg for it? Now you understand why. When the radical left unleashes yet more violence, arson, looting, property destruction, and anarchy across America, most reasonable Americans will fully support temporarily martial law and even military action on the streets of America to clean out the insurrectionists and restore civility to this nation. Trump also has the NDAA signed into law by Obama to imprison Americans who oppose the Clinton regime. The 14th Amendment is the key to all this, but alongside it, don't forget that Barack Obama signed into law the NDAA, which was intended to be handed over to Hillary Clinton as a weapon against patriots and conservatives. Now, that government weapon is in the hands of Trump, and he can deploy it against communist sympathizers and treasonous insurrectionists. In fact, some of the FEMA camp activity being widely reported now, I believe, is actually all about gearing up those camps to house left-wing traitors who are arrested en masse in the coming months. Those irrational, insane, lawless lunatics cannot be rehabilitated to rejoin civil society. At best, the nation will have to warehouse them in prison camps for an extended period of time. In the same way that you can't teach a pigeon to play chess and you can't teach a pig to sing, you can't teach a leftist how to function in civil society. They no longer operate in the realms of reason, civility, fairness, or freedom. All they know is authoritarianism and violence, which explains why they will have to be isolated from society for the rest of their lives. This is what their parents, school teachers, and college professors taught them, of course, how to be crybullies and terrorists, not how to function as reasonable citizens in a free society. Why Democrats will fail to destroy America but succeed in destroying their own cities and states. Despite their best efforts to bring this nation to its knees, Democrats are going to fail in their attempts to destroy America. They will succeed, however, in gutting their own cities and causing an economic implosion that will see most of America's left-wing cities plunged into third world status over the next 5 years. California can barely even keep the lights on as it is. Just wait until they come up $100 billion short for this year's budget and can't force Trump to bail them out with federal money. The mass government layoffs and pension slashing efforts are about to begin in Democrat-run states like New York and California. It will be brutal, and any income earner who has the ability to flee such states is already in the process of bugging out, leaving behind ghost town cities filled with criminals, homeless people, left-wing terrorists, and impoverished welfare recipients. Ultimately, Democrats will end up imploding and destroying their own future, After the failed insurrection attempt, the Democrat Party will be disbanded, and thousands of former Democrat officials will either be dead or imprisoned. This is the fate they have chosen, since they refuse to live in peace with people who have different political views. Exactly when did coexist become kill all Republicans? Trump is in charge and he has numerous secret weapons to deploy against the treasonous Dems, as I explain in this important podcast. And there's a link to the podcast. How to survive the escalating civil war. The war for November's election is just one small chapter in the much larger war against America and humanity. In addition to the war to destroy America, there is a global war to exterminate the human race and depopulate the planet. The war is tied into the COVID-19 vaccines, which are being engineered to achieve global depopulation through infertility and death. And there's a couple of paragraphs that are promoting his survival information and products. He ends the article, "Just because Trump wins doesn't mean the Democrats won't make our lives a living hell for as long as they can. Expect nationwide attacks on the power grid, food supplies, fuel infrastructure and telecommunications in the months ahead. Plus, the treasonous tech giants will continue to escalate their illegal censorship efforts to silence all pro-America voices while amplifying voices of terrorism and communism. Things are about to get real interesting. Get prepared or you won't survive it. If you thought 2020 was bad so far, this party has only just begun, folks." And of course, CUE number 17 has been saying that there would be almost a cyber attack the day after the election. So Mike Adams is also saying something similar. The next article I want to share, again by Mike Adams, this was published September the 12th. "Breaking: President Trump promises to put down Election Day rioting using insurrection powers. Will he invoke 14th Amendment powers and remove all the traitors too?" A week ago, I published a story documenting President Trump's secret weapon against left-wing terrorism, riots and attempted coup. That story, published on Trump.news, reveals how Trump can use the 14th Amendment to order mass arrests of treasonous actors while stripping Electoral College votes from states engaged in open rebellion against the United States of America. This is all described in the 14th Amendment, which was ratified in 1868, right after the Civil War. To further explain all this, I also posted a detailed analysis of how Trump can put down the left-wing rebellion insurrection that's attempting to overthrow the country and remove Trump from office. This video details the 14th Amendment strategy that Trump is obligated to invoke in order to halt the insurrection, and I predicted in this video that Trump would likely declare an insurrection immediately after the election. And it's a link to the video on Brighteon.com. Now, in an interview with Janine Pirro published today, President Trump has stated that he would use insurrection powers to end any uprising. "We'll put them down very quickly. Look, it's called insurrection," Trump stated in the interview, as covered by WND.com. "We have the right to do that. We have the power to do that if we want. We just send in and we do it very easy. I mean, it's very easy. I'd rather not do that because there's no reason for it, but if we had to, we'd do that and put it down within minutes." In other words, Trump is stating that he will deploy the military to end the insurrection. But my analysis says he won't stop there. "Prepare for mass arrests of left-wing traitors starting the day after the election." In my analysis, which has been spot on so far, as you can see from the video and article I published last week, President Trump will invoke the Insurrection Act shortly after the election, possibly the very next day. From there, he will invoke 14th Amendment executive powers, which obligate him to remove from power every mayor, governor, judge, legislator, or military leader who has granted aid or comfort to the insurrection rebellion against the United States. This would include governors Newsom, Brown, and Inslee, California, Oregon, and Washington. as well as Cuomo in New York. It would also include numerous left-wing mayors such as Wheeler, Portland, Lightfoot, Chicago, and the disastrous de Blasio of New York City. In order to remove these treasonous actors from power, Trump would likely need to first declare that a nationwide rebellion is underway, an illegal insurrection, then deploy military police to make the mass arrests while deploying military troops to the streets to put down the riots and restore the rule of law. Notably, the extreme violence and anarchy of left-wing terrorists will give Trump all the justification he needs to declare martial law. And just as an aside, of course, Kamala Harris has been putting out the message that these protests must continue. So, you know, again, it's encouraging not the peaceful protests, which, you know, they claim everything's a peaceful protest, but actually the riots and the looting and so on. Carrying on, in other words, they are playing right into Trump's plan. I'm not a huge fan of the CUE Anon movement, but indeed on this very point, letter 17 seems to be correct. There is a plan in place to defend America and defeat domestic enemies using the military and the Insurrection Act. In fact, when Trump unleashes the military to take down America's domestic enemies, as I have stated over and over again over the past 2 years, you will beg for this action and you will support it because this is the only way to defeat the enemies of America and save this nation. Incidentally, the reason I'm not stating the letter 17 is that 17 actually put out a drop saying don't mention the letter 17 because that will enable the tech giants to censor that content. So he's basically instructing the movement to not mention 17 to avoid having their post taken down. Continuing on, it isn't technically martial law, but there will be troops on the streets and you will support it. So yes, Trump should absolutely invoke the Insurrection Act and he should deploy the military to arrest and remove from power the enemies of America. Technically, this isn't actually martial law because Trump is still in charge and America isn't ruled by a military general. Rather, the military is being deployed as a tool of the president to take down an illegal insurrection. It will be called martial law in a general sense, but it isn't technically martial law. It's national defense under the authority of the President of the United States. Once the enemies of America are taken down and removed from society, this military deployment will be lifted and America can return to a civil society without the lunatic left-wing traitors trying to burn everything down, rig elections, and overthrow the republic to replace it with their communist authoritarian regime. You can expect thousands of left-wing pedophiles and child traffickers to be arrested during all this. And while they're at it, let's hope the US military takes down Netflix and charges its top managers and leaders with distribution of child pornography. It's also time to take down the treasonous insurrectionists pretending to be journalists. Sure, the left-wing media will scream military dictatorship for a while until they are arrested and charged with treason, because many so-called journalists have been nothing more than insurrectionists pushing race wars, riots, violence and revolution against America. They are treasonous actors and they must go. The takedown may begin in just a few weeks. The same is true for big tech CEOs and top-level managers. Hopefully, Trump will use executive power to seize the tech giants and shut them down, then arrest their CEOs for active treason, insurrection against the United States of America. This includes the leaders of Google, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Vimeo, Pinterest, and other corporate monsters that have deliberately and systematically conspired to rig the elections through politically targeted censorship of pro-America voices. They have carried out exactly what Democrats claim the Russians did in 2016, except in this case it's on a far larger scale and it's real. All this may explain why Trump is pushing so aggressively to have a vaccine ready on November 1st, with the military running nationwide distribution of the vaccine. This appears to be a clever cover story, a justification to distribute military troops across the country in preparation for the invocation of the Insurrection Act right after the election. And he actually does a follow-up story on this, which I'm not going to read, but I've said on previous shows that Trump has mentioned the invisible enemy and, you know, promoting a vaccine against it. And I've said before that I think that was a euphemism for the deep state and the vaccine being the cure. And this is basically what Mike Adams is saying at the end of this article. So I think Trump has everything under control, I'm glad to say. Now, perhaps another of Trump's secret weapons relates to Julian Assange. And number 17 actually put out a drop 4709, which just said Julian Assange. And now we have a report from Zero Hedge. Trump approved Assange pardon in exchange for source of DNC leaks. Court testimony. This was published on the 18th, so yesterday. A new bombshell came out of the seventh day of WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange's extradition hearing in London. President Trump was aware of and had approved of a controversial plan that would offer Assange full pardon in exchange for revealing the source of the famous DNC leaks, according to his legal team on Friday. And just as an aside, I think there's going to be much, much more than just the DNC leaks that Assange will be testifying about. And we've said for some time and had hints from letter 17 that Julian Assange could play a big part in the takedown of the deep state. Carrying on, this contradicts prior claims of then US Congressman Dana Rockbacker, I don't know if I've pronounced that right, but anyway, who controversially met with Assange in 2017 to discuss the issue of his pardon. It also puts in doubt long-time Democratic claims that the hack was the work of Russian intelligence and not a Democratic National Committee insider with access to the emails, as many believe. And there's a WikiLeaks tweet. Defense witness in the Assange case, Rora Bakker, proposed a win-win situation. Assange can get on with his life, a pardon in exchange for information about the source, information from Mr. Assange about the source of the DNC leaks would be of value to Mr. Trump. UK journalist Mohammed Elmazi was present during Friday's proceedings and detailed the following. US President Donald Trump was aware of and had approved of US Congressman Dana Rockbacker and Mr. Charles Johnson meeting with Julian Assange in order to secure the source of the DNC leaks, in exchange for some form of pardon, assurance or agreement, which would both benefit President Trump politically and prevent a US indictment against and extradition of Mr. Assange, the Old Bailey heard on Friday. WikiLeaks subsequently tweeted that this was indeed the hugely revelatory assertion presented in open court on behalf of barrister Jennifer Robinson, eyewitness to the alleged August 15, 2017 meeting, while Assange was still confined to the Ecuadorian embassy. Rohrabacher explained that he wanted to resolve the ongoing speculation about Russian involvement in the Democratic National Committee DNC leaks to WikiLeaks, Robinson said. He said that he regarded the ongoing speculation as damaging to US-Russian relations, that it was reviving old Cold War politics, and that it would be in the best interests of the US if the matter could be resolved, she said. However, this wasn't the first time Assange's defence team has made the allegation, as Reuters recounts. Assange's legal team first said at hearings in February that Rohrabacher had conveyed a pardon offer to Assange. At the time, the White House called the assertion that Trump had tried to reach a deal with Assange a complete fabrication and a total lie. Rohrabacher also emphasized amid the controversy that he was acting on his own and was not sent on behalf of the White House, but merely offered to ask Trump for an Assange pardon. And there's another tweet. This is from Don't Extradite Assange at DEA Campaign. Julian Assange's lawyer, Sui Generisian Statement, I think that's the name of the lawyer and his Twitter handle, was read to the court, and it shows the political nature of this indictment, saying how a representative of Trump was sent to the Ecuadorian embassy to offer Assange a deal of a presidential pardon in exchange for the DNC source. Assange's lawyers are offering it as proof to the court that fundamentally the American extradition request is political in nature and not a matter of violating US laws. If true, Assange obviously didn't go for it, likely in line with the firmly established WikiLeaks policy of never revealing any source, no matter the level of pressure the leaks organisation comes under. Well, we'll have to wait and see. I mean, I think there's been a lot of alternative news about Assange, that actually he is a white hat. And also we've seen a lot of evidence in terms of the data download speed from the DNC server, that it was Seth Rich who actually downloaded it to a thumb drive, and of course was then murdered shortly afterwards. So we'll have to wait and see what happens with Mr. Assange. I'm sure that Trump has a lot of other Trump cards up his sleeve. So we'll see how this plays out with only, I think, 45 days to the election. So interesting times ahead. I'm going to move on now to the COVID lawsuits. And this is an article, it's actually by John Rappaport at his blog nomorefakenews.com. And again, I don't agree with everything Rappaport says. I mean, he's called out Trump for his handling of the COVID-19 and the shutdowns and everything else. And my impression was that he wasn't seeing the real art of war strategy behind it. But of course, we can't always agree with everything, but this is a very good article to update us on what's now happening. And this is major case filed against Ohio governor and the state of Ohio for restricting freedom without legitimate justification. This was actually published on the 14th of September. And it's really interesting because I think this could open the floodgates for many other states to follow suit. And in fact, the reason I said COVID lawsuits in the title is there is a legal team being put together in California to actually do the same thing, to challenge the Californian state governors and so on. So let me just carry on with this article. Ohio attorney Thomas Renz, on behalf of plaintiffs, has filed a case against the state of Ohio and Governor Mike DeWine. Renz is asking for a jury trial. And there's a link to the press release by the attorney and the court document and a lawsuit article archive as well. This case in the current climate should provoke intense interest from the public and from every lawyer within hailing distance. Here is the impressive opening salvo in the court filing. In recent months, entire states have been imprisoned without due process and with the clear threat to impose such lockdowns again. Interstate travel has been severely restricted, privacy rights have been devastated, numerous business takings without compensation, and many regulations being implemented without statutory process requirements under the guise of a health emergency that is roughly as dangerous as a seasonal influenza outbreak. The plaintiffs in this case have all been injured in various capacities by these unconstitutional actions, and without action by the court will be left without redress. More terrifying, without action by the court will be setting future precedent that will allow states to withhold fundamental constitutional rights in violation of US Supreme Court precedent, circumventing the various levels of scrutiny applied to such rights and justify such actions under public health emergency orders without subjecting those orders to any real review. Just trust the bureaucrats because they are the experts. Here is the most important point. We humbly ask the court in this case to recognise that the political process and operative orders are invalid if based on false or misleading information, and recognise the criticality that all future emergency orders be based and maintained on clear, honest facts, particularly when such orders are infringing on constitutional rights. In other words, a declared state of emergency cannot stand on the mere basis of arbitrary edict. Facts matter, actual science matters. Reasons why an emergency is declared matter. People can't be locked down and restrained from earning a living and having contact with other humans simply because a state authority decides to issue such orders. If this case goes to trial, the door will open to the presentation of fact and science. Attorney Renz for the plaintiffs is well aware of this, and his filing is studied with bold and accurate claims of fact. According to recent data from the Ohio COVID-19 dashboard, we can see that the spike in cases is actually just a spike in testing. The state went from a few thousand tests per day to 25,000 tests plus per day. The positivity rate for COVID-19 has remained fairly steady, but there have been more tests. When the emergency was declared, we heard a daily drumbeat about the danger and deaths related to COVID-19. Now that the case fatality rate has been shown to be roughly the same as the yearly flu, those death numbers are simply not scary to the public. As a result, the state sees no impact from talking about fatalities and has instead begun testing more so they could tell us there are more cases. The PCR tests are generally viewed as the means of determining if a patient has COVID-19. The problem is that the inventor of the PCR test, who won a Nobel Prize in chemistry for the invention, specifically stated that the test was not well suited to and never designed to diagnose disease. Much has been made about this in the press and elsewhere, but the reason there are issues with PCR testing in relation to COVID is that PCR testing cannot detect how much of a virus exists in a person. Exposure of the existence of incomplete traces of a virus do not mean a person is infected with a disease, which is part of the reason the PCR tests have an elevated rate of false positives. There is not even a true standard for testing. Instead, we have numerous tests from numerous vendors that may or may not have a similar standard for what it means to have COVID-19. The CDC, governor, and ODH, Ohio Department of Health, know this, so they have allowed for the diagnosis of cases based on as meaningless criteria as a cough in a community in which COVID supposedly exists. Plough through this quote and then receive the translation below. And this is again quoting from this court filing. Another document also came to light that is critical in demonstrating the egregiously misleading nature of the public COVID-19 data. On the final paragraph of page 39 of a document published by the FDA regarding instructions for a COVID-19 test is the following quote. Since no quantified virus isolates of the 2019 nCoV, novel COVID, RNA were tested with characterized stocks of in vitro transcribed full-length RNA, N-gene GenBank accession, and there's a number of known titer, spiked into a diluent consisting of a suspension of human A549 cells and viral transport medium to mimic clinical specimen. I'm so glad they're giving a plain English version. In plain English, this means that there are no available pure 2019 novel COVID virus isolates to test against. So instead, an educated best guess is being used. The question this leads us to is how accurate can a test be for a virus that has not been defined? If our freedoms are to be abridged under an emergency declaration related to a disease, should it not be a requirement that the disease at least be defined? As you can see, this case is being argued not only on constitutional grounds, but on major and deep issues of science. The plaintiffs are not accepting the word from the experts. There is no reason why they or anyone should surrender and accept. In Ohio, a bright light is shining in the darkness. And John Rappaport has done a couple of other articles that I don't have time to read, a follow-up on this lawsuit. And also, he has an article where he really goes into the unfounded basis for COVID-19 diagnosis. And I will pass those on to Nancy to share in the YouTube description. I just want to touch very quickly on some recent news. It happened yesterday, and this was the death of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And there's a tweet by Ted Cruz, Senator Ted Cruz. I think it was earlier today. There's some controversy about whether Trump can get a replacement Supreme Court justice before the election. Of course, the Democrats are saying, no, 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 you've got to wait till after the election. Senator Cruz says, we can't have Election Day come and go with a 4-4 court. We risk a constitutional crisis if we do not have a 9-justice Supreme Court, particularly when there is such a risk of a contested election. Now, it's interesting because there have been rumours in the alternative community that Ruth Bader Ginsburg has been dead for quite some time, and that this may just be a timing thing that her death should be announced. And in fact, I seem to remember there was something put out on one of the news platforms announcing her death some time ago, and then it was rapidly taken down. And then there's a drop by number 17, and the drop number is 4722, which I think links very much to this situation. It says, add it all up, number one, virus, number two, riots organised _ Antifa, fires, the why. And there's a link to a YouTube video, which is a clip from a Fox News interview. And it's talking about the colour revolution, which is a CIA playbook for taking down regimes that they don't like. And the suggestion is that this is exactly what is being used at the moment to take down the Trump administration. And it continues, make no mistake, they will not concede on election night. Make no mistake, they will contest this legally in battleground states. Make no mistake, they will project doubt in the election results. Make no mistake, they will organize massive riots and attempt Anarchy 99 design, playbook known, letter 17. So I think perhaps the replacement of Ruth Bader Ginsburg could play a part in legally battling the attempts by the Democrats to overturn the election results. Continuing on with the legal narrative, I'm going to read sections from a beachbroadcast.com article, which has a lot of other links in it. But this is about the subpoenas that have been issued. And also, interestingly, there's mention of FBI Director Wray, and there's a tweet in here from Santa Surfing, which includes an ABC News tweet. FBI Director Chris Wray testified that people ascribing to some sort of white supremacist type ideology are the biggest chunk of racially motivated violent extremism, which is the largest segment of the domestic terrorism category. And Wray apparently testified on the 17th of September, and Trump now has a possible list of Wray replacements. And letter 17, I think I talked about this in a couple of shows ago, actually showed an image of Wray with a red cross through him, implying that he was going to be taken out, or removed, I should say, from his office. And there's another tweet as well by Newsmax saying, after Newsmax TV's Emeril Robinson reported that Sidney Powell is on a short list of candidates to possibly replace FBI Director Christopher Wray, Powell reacts to the news. And again, this is a clip from a TV interview. But Sidney Powell, of course, is the attorney for General Flynn, and she is the one who spoke about the Wiener laptop. So if she's put in charge of the FBI, I think we could see some really interesting things happening. And then we have a tweet by Paul Sperry. Here's a full list of Spygate witnesses just approved for subpoenas issued by Senate Government Affairs Chair Ron Johnson. It's a series of three tweets. And we've got James Baker, John Brennan, Sidney Blumenthal, James Clapper, Kevin Kleinsmith, James Comey, Patrick Conlon, Kelly Degnan, Michael Dempsey, Mary Gleason, Seth Greenfeld, Kathleen Kavalech, Jacob Liu, Ed Martin, Dennis McDonough, Danny McGlynn, Sally Moyer, Michael Newfield, Victoria Newland, Stephanie O'Sullivan, Carol Ochoa, Lisa Page, John Phillips, Joe Pientka, Samantha Power, Bill Priestap, Sarah Raskin, Susan Rice, Cody Shearer, Nathan Sheets, Elizabeth Sherwood Randall, Eric Simmons, Peter Strzok, Adam Subin, and Jonathan Weiner. And again, interestingly, the letter 17 put out a drop number 4711, which just says John Brennan. And of course, in August, Brennan was actually interviewed by John Durham. So I think he's in trouble. There's another interesting link in the Beach Broadcast article, and this is to djhjmedia.com. Bill Binney bus Mueller team on erased data tells feds where to find it all. Now, I'm not sure when this was published, but this is one of the topics I didn't have time to cover last week, and it's about how a number of phones belonging to the FBI were actually wiped, very coincidentally not. Let me read a little bit of this article. A former director of the NSA, the focus of the documentary A Good American, who developed algorithms for a federal program called Thin Thread that predicted the 9/11 attacks, posted on Twitter that he knew where to find the data that Robert Mueller's team reportedly wiped clean before an investigation. Re-Mueller team deleting text messages. This won't do. If government wants those messages, all they have to do is go to NSA StellarWind database and pull them out, as all SMS going over the cell network are captured and stored forever. At Devin Nunes knows this, Binney wrote. Recently, a Judicial Watch lawsuit by President Tom Fitton uncovered that up to 30 phones containing text messages between the Mueller investigative team were damaged after they came into question in an investigation into their actions to overthrow President Donald Trump. The pandemic of wiped phones among the Mueller team requires a criminal investigation of this destruction of evidence and potential obstruction of justice, said Judicial Watch President Tom Fitton. DOJ and FBI hid these records for nearly 2 years, only adding to the cover-up. Lawmakers are calling for an investigation into the phone data. And there's a tweet here from Representative Jim Jordan. Mueller investigates President Trump for 2 years, finds nothing. Judicial Watch, FOIA's Mueller team, Freedom of Information Act, of course, discovers that Mueller's staff wiped their cell phones of all data. Time for Mueller and company to be investigated. Now, the 17th letter has said on numerous occasions that they have it all, and this pointing to the NSA for the deleted texts is, I think, putting the Dems into even more panic. And that leads me to the last article I have time for, and this is Zero Hedge, and it's from, well, actually published today, and it's absolutely terrified. Democrats demand emergency investigation into Durham probe. So they're so scared of the Crossfire Hurricane investigation that Durham is doing, which is, of course, the, you know, the Spygate, Obamagate, Russia probe, etc., etc., that they're trying to launch a counter investigation. Let me read some of this article. In August, Attorney General William Barr refused to commit to withholding any report by DOJ watchdog John Durham before the November election, causing congressional Democrats to froth at the mouth over an October surprise meant to hurt Joe Biden. Durham was appointed by Barr to investigate the Russia investigators, including members of the Obama-Biden administration, the FBI and the DOJ. Now, days after a top prosecutor on the Durham team resigned, reportedly over what she thought was pressure from Barr to produce results before the November election, the Democratic chairs of four House committees have demanded an emergency investigation into Durham's probe, according to the Daily Caller. We write to ask that you open an emergency investigation into whether U.S. Attorney General William Barr, U.S. Attorney John Durham, and other Department of Justice political appointees are following DOJ's long-standing policy to avoid taking official actions or other steps that could improperly influence the upcoming presidential election, wrote Democrats Adam Schiff, no surprise there, Jerry Nadler, no surprise there either, Zoe Lofgren and Carolyn Maloney in a letter to DOJ Inspector General Michael Horowitz. Absolutely terrified Democrats demand emergency investigation into Durham probe. The letter follows a similar demand on Thursday from 10 Democratic members of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Democrats are questioning the legal authority of the investigation and whether Durham is allowed to release a public report of the probe before the election. Attorney General Barr has signaled repeatedly that he is likely to allow DOJ to take prosecutorial actions, make public disclosures, and even issue reports before the presidential election in November. Such actions clearly appear intended to benefit President Trump politically, the Democrats wrote, and that's again from the Daily Caller. House Judiciary Republicans suggested that the Democrats are absolutely terrified of the Durham probe, as they know Barr and Durham are cleaning up what the Obama-Biden DOJ left behind, adding, and the results won't be pretty for them. I don't have time to read the rest of that article, but I will share it, of course, with Nancy to include in the YouTube video description. So what we're seeing, I think, is a real ramping up of the plan. And, you know, we've seen many times the statement panic in DC. And with all that I've shared in terms of using the 14th Amendment and, you know, Ruth Bader Ginsburg going and the subpoenas, I think the plan is all coming together. And I think we're going to see some exciting things unfold in the coming weeks. I think there'll be a lot of activity on both sides in terms of the upcoming election. And I'm sure that Trump has in place countermeasures to stop the Democrats from trying to steal the election. And I've seen posts by people, you know, oh, I'm worried that Trump won't win. I think we are going to see a landslide. And I think the White Hats, the Alliance, have everything in place to stop the Democrats and the deep state from stealing this election. But we'll have to wait and see. And I'm sure in future shows, I'll have lots more to share with you as well. So that's all I have time for today. Oh, just before I go, I just wanted to share the letter 17 most recent drop. And all it says is rig for red. And my understanding is that this is terminology for battle station. So I think what we're getting is a message that things are really ramping up in terms of the plan and taking out the deep state. So that's just another confirmation. So thank you very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed the show. Remember, keep the faith, trust the plan, manifest the reality that you want from all of this. I'm certainly focusing on that myself and seeing all the hopeful signs, the encouraging signs that this is going to end extremely well. So I hope you'll join me next week for another Cosmic Creating show. And I'd like to thank Nancy, of course, for producing, as always. Stay safe, be well, keep the faith, and bye for now.
You have been listening to the Cosmic Creating Radio Show with Jan Shaw, a production of Cosmic Reality Radio.
Live long and prosper.